Sexy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Wow, I've got two wonderful guests coming up today, but I wanted to talk for a moment because Mother's Day is coming up, and I had a wonderful poet on the program a few weeks ago, and she wrote a book of poetry that is about mothers, for mothers, and grandmothers, and daughters. And I wanted to just take a minute to talk about, first of all, her book, and also about poetry in general, because, you know, authors are always asking me, they're saying, they'll send me questions now since I'm starting now to start going back to events where I can actually meet people. But I get these questions, how can I become a better author? How can I become a better writer? What do I need to do? You know, even those authors who have gone to college and they've studied MFA courses, they've studied writing. But one of the things that I always tell them is that if you read poetry, poetry really is a training ground to become a really fine writer. You learn, well, there are two ways that you really learn. So two businesses where you learn the value of words. One is poetry and the other is copywriting. And whether you, no matter what type of book you are writing, thriller, cozy mystery, a romance, the way that you write is really, I can't express this in quite clearly enough, I think, to people, because I'm getting a lot of books where I'm telling you, I know when you are using Grammarly, or I'm sorry, whatever, one of the grammar programs, any grammar program, if you're going to use a grammar program to become a writer, you're cheating yourself. You really are cheating yourself. You have to, you know, take a step back and be able to look at your sentences, and you yourself have to be able to analyze them. You have to be able to look at a sentence and say, yes, that's a good sentence. And unfortunately, with the modern systems that some people are using and that are encouraged by writing programs, where they will correct a word that you've used. It, you might have been typing it. It came straight from your head, straight from your sort of the back of your mind, and you use a word, and then the computer program comes and says, well, really, do you want to use that word? 9 times out of 10, they are absolutely wrong. The word that they suggest is wrong. They take a generic word for something that was very specific. And I'm noticing this more and more. So I'm very careful now when I read books. If I notice something like that, that it just stops me. I just say, that's enough. I want writers to learn to use words and to learn to use them beautifully. So I want to suggest that you get this book. It's called I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom. It is a very small book of poetry by Kim Dower. And it is just beautifully written. Each word, each little word is important, and it is in the right place at the right time. And it's a marvel. She can write about anything. She can take any subject and turn it into a poem, just like Jim Lamb, who does our literary gems, can. It's this power of poetry that really is so wonderful. And in so many ways, poetry, one, can calm you down, because you should be reading poetry out loud. When you get a book, read it out loud. Read it out loud to yourself and read it out loud to other people. But so that's one of the ways that it calms you down. As you're reading, you'll find that your heart rate will slow down. and you'll start pacing yourself. And then you'll notice that word is just right. And that word is just right. And that word is just right. And then, and you go back and you say, how did such simple words turn into a complete story? In one page, Kim Dower can tell a story about sardines that you will never forget. And you never even probably like sardines. But the story that she paints in one page of poetry is so compelling. So again, please, everybody, think about reading poetry. In the old days, and all the great authors, they all read poetry. When you look back and you study them, almost all the great novelists read poetry. And that's why they are so good at using words. And why sometimes nowadays, when we listen to too much television, and we're hearing sort of fragmented dialogue, we don't have the same love of words that the old day writers did. And so now it's a training ground. You have to train yourself to learn to understand and to visualize words and what the words do. Luckily, I've had some really great authors on lately that really have a wonderful way with words because they've studied words. And it's not just, you know, it's really so important. And I just want to tell you that get this book. It's called I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom. It's a book of poetry for mothers and daughters and grandmothers, and a book that will really fill your heart with love and memories. And I hope that you will get this for Mother's Day. You have time to order it, the paperback version now, and also, you know, just, I think the hardcover version is available to just order it. And I think you will find inspiration for your own writing if you are a writer, or inspiration for your own life, because we all have mothers, and whether they're with us or not, you want to remember them. So get that book from Kim Dower. Now, I'm just waiting. I'm going to be talking. Wow, you know, sometimes life is funny. Books come along just at the right time, just when you need them. So I'm just waiting now for an author whose book, wow, this is going to be a wonderful conversation, because everything about this book I love. And that's exciting for me. And when I'm talking about somebody who knows how to use words, I can tell you that my next guest, the first guest for today, is someone who has really accomplished a great deal with his writing. And so I'm just waiting to talk to him. And then at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to another author from England. And we're going to be talking about a fantasy book. Wow. This is exciting. Someone from Cambridge. So I'm looking forward to talking to her at the bottom of the hour. And that's going to be interesting, because A.F. Stedman is in Cambridge studying law, and then she writes a book. But so I'm just waiting now. I hope that my guest is going to be on. Is he on? I think so. So I'm... Okay. Wow. I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper Don Bentley, a New York Times bestselling author of Tom Clancy, Target Acquired, and the author of this wonderful new book called Hostile Intent, the third in the Matt Drake series. Hi, Don.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me today.
Whoa, what a timely book. When you put this book to bed, what, about a year ago, year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Did you expect you would be talking about it in the middle of a war in Ukraine?
No, I did not. And so what you're alluding to is Hostile Intent is the third book in my series. And the first two focus very much on Middle East and Middle East threats. And so what I wanted to do for Hostile Intent is set the book in Europe and write a bigger book. And the way I wanted to write a bigger book was to show what a Russian invasion of Ukraine would look like. And it has been surreal and heartbreaking at the same time to see a lot of the things that I wrote about fictitiously now come to fruition almost a year later.
It's like, oh my gosh, were they reading your book? It is amazing. I just want to tell everybody that, of course, you are a former FBI special agent, a SWAT team member, and an Army Apache helicopter pilot. So this, I mean, this war must, like, does it blow your mind?
Yeah, it really does. And it's, you know, from a Apache helicopter perspective, my first assignment out of flight school was in Korea. And in the Korean Peninsula, the Apaches do a mission, and that's called a deep attack, where you actually practice to go into North Korea, and your job is to intercept big columns of North Korean armored vehicles moving south towards South Korea. And so there were a lot of memes going around about from my Apache pilot friends when that infamous Russian armored column was stretching out for 20 or 40 something odd miles, and thinking, man, if we had a squadron of Apaches, we could go to town on that sucker.
That's what I was thinking too. I was thinking, oh boy. Now, my husband was also a pilot, and so I tend to look at things from the pilot's point of view. It was sort of breathtaking to see what the Ukrainians were able to do with those tanks.
And I have to compliment you, Patsy, on waiting until now to tell me that your husband was a pilot, because if he was here, he would have worked it in the first sentence or two, because that's what pilots do. And so I appreciate you having enough restraint to wait until now. But yeah, absolutely. The thing in writing Hostile Intent, there's certainly some things I got right in the book, but the biggest miss I had that I think most of the world had was I underestimated the ferocity and bravery that the Ukrainian people have showed in resisting the Russian invasion. And so one of the points of view characters in my book is a Ukrainian militia that's frantically trying to acquire a nuclear weapon to stop the Russian invasion. But man, when you see this now and you see everything from, you know, women and men and people who are accountants and teachers and engineers learning how to make Molotov cocktails to throw at Russian vehicles, you know, the sheer bravery and audacity of that just takes your breath away.
Well, it did come as a surprise to a lot of the world. Of course, for me, why I first fell in love with this book is that it starts, after a few chapters, it goes to Vienna. And I spent a great deal of time in Vienna. And so it brought back a lot of fond memories for me of yeah. Vienna. And just the thought of the goulash. Don't you love Vienna?
Yeah, I guess so. As in the Army, my last assignment was in Germany. I got to spend 3 years in Germany, which is phenomenal. And as a part of that, we tried to travel as much as we could, and I actually got to run a marathon in Vienna. So it's such a beautiful city. It's so European with the cobblestone streets and everything that you hear about Vienna, the chocolate, the coffee, the music is true. But what I thought that was super interesting that I didn't know at the time and kind of learned later is Vienna also has a second name. So instead of the City of Music, it's also called the City of Spies. And there's this urban legend that at any one point there are 7,000 spies walking the streets of Vienna plying their craft. And so it was this interesting dynamic in the Cold War where it was kind of ground zero for East meets West and kind of crawling with folks practicing espionage. And I'm like, man, I gotta pull that into this book and use that as well. And so, as you said, my protagonist, Matt Drake, gets to go to Vienna to meet with a former asset of his. And then, as things do in these kind of books, his operation goes off the rails fast. So, but it was a joy spending time in Vienna.
Oh, for me, just the memories of sitting there and ordering coffee, mit Schlag. It's like, whoa, it was a fond memory. Wow. I, of course, love Matt Drake. I think he has to be like one of the very, very top in this whole sort of terrorist espionage. There's nobody better than him. And I love actually that it starts off in talking about guns, because I'm somebody who slept for, well, 30 years with an Uzi under my bed. So I appreciate books where they're talking about guns. I get such a kick out of it. So I was really thrilled with this first chapter. I tell us a little bit about Madrick, where he is at this point in the book, because he's married, and tell us about him. I love him. He's a wonderful character.
Thank you so much. When I came to this genre, my editor's a guy named Tom Colgan, and he has edited everybody from Tom Clancy when he was still alive to Janet Ivanovich and now Mark Greene. And so Tom said, you know, as a new writer coming to this genre, you have to do something that's the same but different. And so the same in that your book should be shelved next to Brad Taylor's, and people will say, yeah, it belongs in this genre, but different because Brad writes a pretty good Brad Taylor book, and I'm never going to be him. So what am I going to do that's different? And so for me, that really took a form of two things. And I say that heart and humor are what drive my writing. And so what's been a huge influence on me was Nelson DeMille's John Corey series, where he just has this witty, really funny first-person protagonist. And I remember reading his first book with that character that was called Plum Island. And I got done, and I was like, I would read a book about that guy going grocery shopping, because he's so much fun to be with. And at the same time, the people I know who could be Matt Drake often have a sense of humor, because it's the way that gallows humor is how you deal with the incredible stressful points of your life that are your normal vocation. And so I wanted to include that. And so Matt is a very witty character that pokes fun of himself a lot. And then at the same time, the heart aspect of it is twofold. And so number one, Matt is madly in love with his wife. And that was another aspect of real life. The people I know who do this for a living have families and wives that they love that serve as a counterpoint to the crazy world that's their daily life. It's kind of an anchor for them back to reality. And there aren't too many books in this genre that show that. And so I wanted to show that aspect of Matt and his wife, Lila. And then the third part of that heart is that when you're in the military, there's this amazing dynamic that people from all backgrounds, all walks of life, all races, all genders come together in a melting pot. And oftentimes that melting pot is augmented by the crucible of combat. And you come out of the other side as brothers and sisters. And two people that should have nothing in common are now brothers for life. And so in Matt's case, that plays out, and his best friend is a guy who goes by his call sign of Frodo, who was a former Delta Force operator who was grievously hurt in a mission that you can read about in Without Sanction, and that is Matt's best friend that he loves more than a brother. And so I really wanted to bring those aspects of heart and humor to the genre through this book, and hopefully that resonates with people as it did with you.
Oh, it does. And it's so funny that you mention Nelson DeMille. First of all, he's been a guest on my program. But what's wonderful about that the idea is that when I met my husband, he was reading By the Rivers of Babylon. So, which is, I think, one of the best books, ever written, a book that you can reread a couple of times.
Yeah, I think that might have even been Nelson DeMille's debut, was by that.
Yeah.
And another thing that he brings, I think, that's so important is Nelson DeMille was a Vietnam War veteran, was a cavalry commander. I was actually an air cavalry commander. I got to meet him once at Thriller Fest and was an incredibly suave and debonair, and I think I couldn't even remember my own name, and I'm just like, I love you, Nelson. So hopefully he forgives me that, but he's a fantastic writer and a huge influence on my writing.
Well, and it shows, actually. I recognize sort of, of course, so many thriller writers have been on my program, and you're right. You really have, I think you've set yourself apart in a way, because I love this humor. I think it's you know, when you're under all this stress of all of these assignments, the danger to have this,
yep,
this element of fun and the element of,
yep,
of a loving relationship, I think is great.
Well, thank you. I think the best fiction, no matter what genre, is character driven. Brad Taylor told me once, you know, people come for the story, but they come back for the characters. And so if you can give something to people, you know, one of my other favorite writers is Daniel Silva, and he has such intricately drawn characters that when I pick up his new book for that year, it feels like I'm coming home to a bunch of friends. And so that's what I would love for people when they read Hostile Intent is to get to know Matt and his merry band of misfits, and then say, man, I want to come back and see those guys again.
Well, I think you've accomplished it. And of course, now when you were there, you went to the Ukraine, so you understood. It's so funny, you know, as I said, I spent a lot of time in Europe. So I understood the importance of Ukraine, and it's so surprising how many Americans had no idea where the Ukraine was, let alone the importance of the Ukraine.
Yeah, no idea where them was. And the sad part in all of this, and there's a lot of sadness, is that this much of it comes back to nuclear weapons from the standpoint of, in my book, certainly that's one of the subplots. You see Vladimir Putin rattling the nuclear weapons, rattling his nuclear weapons saber now. But back in 1994, the Ukraine was, I think, the world's third largest repository for nuclear weapons, in that they had much of the Soviet Union's old arsenal on their soil. And so in 1994, the Ukraine, Russia at the time, U.S. and U.K. got together, and the Ukrainians, with something called the Budapest Memorandum, gave up their nuclear weapons for assurances from the U.S. that we would safeguard their territorial integrity. And so back then, they gave up what you could argue is the one thing that would deter Russian aggression now, and they did it based on our guarantee. And so to me, that's a travesty. It's a travesty to the people of Ukraine that the United States gave its word as a sovereign nation that we would protect their territorial integrity if they gave up their nukes. And instead, we had to sit by and watch as Russia invaded Ukraine. And so it really is a tragedy.
It is. It's a terrible outcome from, well, bad ideas, a lot of bad ideas.
Yeah.
A lot of bad ideas. Yeah. But your book, I think one of the, you know, it's a timely book, and I think it will really help people to understand the situation, too. By reading this book, they'll get this in-depth understanding of the political situation, and I'm sure that everybody's will enjoy it. I mean, I know everybody will enjoy the writing. You're great with dialogue, particularly. I mean, you're great with everything,
thank
but
you.
your dialogue moves. It there's not a wasted word in there. It's wonderful the way you write.
I appreciate you saying that. You know, writers approach the craft from different perspectives, but for me, I always hear the characters talking first, and oftentimes I start a chapter with that because that's what I hear as a writer, and so I spend a lot of time as a non-writer listening to how people talk and then trying to dialogue so that you could read a line of dialogue and know which character's talking because it's distinctive. So I really appreciate you saying that, Patsy.
And I noticed that you did start your chapters with dialogue because I liked it, and it takes us right into the story. Sometimes, you know, people will tend to write like a long paragraph at the beginning of a chapter, and I like that you just jump into it. I noticed like in chapter 45, Ella starts, she says, I've done many stupid things in my life. So the minute I read that opening line, I thought, yeah, you know, this is the way that people think, or this is the way that people talk, and you took us right into that story. So when she said, I've done many stupid things in my life, none so stupid as this, I mean, you see, I could hear it in my head. You accomplished, this is a great accomplishment. And later on when you have, Frito say, ETA 30 seconds, I like the way that you start these chapters. You take us into the story. You get us. We hear it in our heads. And for me, of course, I visualize it as a film. So all around it works.
Yes. Well, like I said, I really appreciate you saying that. And the other part of that, I think, comes from my time as a military officer, because when a battle is unfolding, the way you're tracking it in your middle of it is through radio transmissions. And so you're hearing bits of it, especially when I was an Apache pilot, we had four or five radios at the same time. That would be, you know, some would be to other aircraft, some would be to the guys on the ground, some would be to your commander. And so you really have to hear that and then form a picture in your head of what's happening based on what you're hearing. And I think that probably influenced my writing as well, because that's how I associate stories, is through dialogue and what people are saying.
Well, I think you've done a great job with this book. It is book three in the Matt Drake novel. And I love Matt, and I love his wife. I really do. They really fantastic characters. And I see that Lee Child has given you a blurb for the front of the book. And anyway, I'm so really happy that I got to speak to you, because you're somebody I understand. A pilot is a pilot, and as you said, I had the restraint, but I did manage to get in there that I love guns too, and I like the idea of the Glock. I'm very happy that she got one, because I think it's a good thing to have nowadays.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was a joy to talk with you, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for using the word joy in a sentence with me. That's wonderful. Well, Don Bentley, I think you're wonderful. I love the book. It's called Hostile Intent. And where you have a website, where do people find you?
Yep. So everything, both in my series and the Clancy series, you can find information about on my website. It's Don Bentley Book. .com, so just DonBentley books.com, and or you can find me on social media, and it's at Bentley Don B, at BentleyDonB, both at Twitter and Facebook. So I love hearing from readers. I'd love for you guys to stop by and check me out and tell me what you think of Hostile Intent.
Okay, and he has a newsletter too, folks, so get over there to his website and sign up for the newsletter, because you will fall in love. If you haven't read a Matt Drake book yet, you better start, because you'll read this one first. And as we said, it's very timely, because it's got all about the Ukraine in it. And then you'll definitely go back and start at the beginning. Anyway, wonderful having you on the program today, Don.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. All right. A pilot. I love pilots. What can I do? They're just so sweet. All right, what a book. I'm just waiting now for a call. I'm going to skip commercials for a minute, because I don't know what time my caller's calling, and she's supposed to be calling from England, and so I don't want to keep her waiting in with commercials, but I will talk for a moment about solar energy while we wait. And one of the things, oh boy, everybody is going crazy with their electric bills. If you are like me, you hate electric bills. You hate paying for electricity. And so if you're thinking of going solar, I want to tell you my sponsor, Efficient Home Services, is just a wonderful company. They work with you to come out with an audit of your energy needs and how you can save money, how you can cut down your energy bills. And by going solar, by also other efficiencies that are necessary. So please, all you have to do is go to their website, and it's called just Go EHS, and find out more about how you can save money on your electric bills. And then I am going to be talking in a minute to, well, I think she's calling in from England. Am I right? Hello?
Hi, Patsy. Hi, it's Annabelle Steadman.
Oh, Annabelle A.F. Steadman. Oh, I'm so happy. Are you in England? Yes?
I am, yeah. I'm in a studio in London.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I have one important question for you. I mean, I know that, you know, you've written this book and everybody's going crazy about it. And, you know, everybody in the world probably has seen Stacks of Skandar and the Unicorn Thief. By A.F. Steadman. Annabelle, tell me one thing. This is an important question to me. Premier League, what's your team?
Oh, it's got to be Arsenal.
Oh, you're Arsenal. Well, I'm Tottenham.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We can be enemies, frenemies.
Yeah, frenemies. Let's go for that.
Yes. Oh, because I watch every Tottenham game. I never miss a game. I lived in England. I know you're from Kent, and I lived in... I had a 400-year-old cottage in Sonning near Henley. You know where Sonning is? Near Henley?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had a 400-year-old cottage there that I'm from America. I'm from northern Michigan. But when I was 11, I decided I wanted to go live near where Jane Austen was born. And so when I was 21 years old, I went and bought a 400-year-old cottage right there.
That's amazing.
And then, of course, I became a Tottenham fan. And now I don't miss a game. My sister has one of those 20-foot scarves she wraps around her during a game for good luck. So, you know, Tottenham is doing pretty well.
Yeah, they're doing well.
Yes.
My husband supports Leeds, and they're not doing quite so well.
Oh, that's okay. I want Tottenham. Oh, I just live and hope always. Of course, we love Harry Kane. So what can I do?
Oh, yes.
Don't you just love Harry Kane?
Oh, I really do.
I really do. Okay. Well, now we have to talk about this book. Well, we want to talk about this book because it is, but I don't get a chance to talk to England enough. So that's why I needed to know. And now I know, will know who to root against. So Skandar and the Unicorn Thief. Of course, this is a wildly strange book, and you have created a wildly strange phenomenon here.
Yeah, unicorns, but not as you know them.
No, definitely not as we know them. I never actually liked unicorns. I was never one of these girly girls who wanted a pink unicorn. They got on my nerves. So I wasn't too unhappy that your unicorns are quite different. Do you want to explain exactly what the heck they are?
So I suppose the way to sum it up is unicorns don't belong in fairy tales anymore. They belong in nightmares. And the unicorns in Skandar are ferocious. They're powerful. They're elemental creatures. So fire, water, earth, air, magic. And they're deadly. Unfortunately, but if you are lucky enough to bond with a unicorn, your destined unicorn, you can ride your unicorn, and they won't eat you. They might eat your friends, but not you.
Yeah. Where did you get this idea? I mean, was it a nightmare?
It wasn't a nightmare. I was doing my law exams, and I remember very, very clearly walking home, and I just had this image of a boy riding this unicorn, and I was like you. I don't like unicorns. I don't like them, the fluffy ones. I was always more dragons and phoenixes and scarier creatures. And so I think I played with that image in my mind, and I thought, I want to change them. I want to make them something else, like a creature that is majestic and different. And I just ran with it, and I built a world for Skandar and his unicorn to live in.
You definitely built a world. When we talk about an author doing world building, you are right there at the top, because this is a complicated world, and with a explain how they are hatched. This was really got me.
So where, if you pass the hatchery exam when you're 13, you have to take the exam. And if you pass, you might be destined for a unicorn. So then you fly to the island in a helicopter, and you're at the hatchery, which is this big mound on top of a cliff. And it has a door on it. And if you put your palm against the door and it opens, it means that you are, in fact, destined for one of the unicorn eggs inside. But that's not the end of the journey. When you're inside, you have to put your hand on top of many different unicorn eggs because you're trying to find your destined unicorn. You can't just have anyone. And when you put your palm on your destined unicorn's egg, then its horn will come out of the egg and pierce your palm. And that's when it starts to hatch. So that's how you find each other. And then you hatch the unicorn in a hatching cell together. And that's the beginning of your journey as the unicorn rider.
Wow. What an image you've created. What a concept. It's fascinating. So there you were, sitting in Cambridge, taking very, I don't know, boring law classes. And there, and this pops into your head.
Yeah, and I think I always wanted to be a writer. I wrote my first book when I was 14 in a notebook, carefully numbered pages, about pirates and spies. So from a young age, I really, really wanted to be a writer, but I was also a very sensible, practical child, and we didn't have very much money when I was growing up as a family, and I knew that I needed to do something that was going to support myself. So, and I didn't think writing would do that for me. I never really understood how you became an author, and so I kind of left the dream behind for quite a few years. But I just couldn't, once I thought of this image, I couldn't get it out of my mind, and I couldn't let go of the dream. And I just got to this point where I went into a bookshop and I opened a book and I hadn't been reading, and I just thought, why aren't you doing this? You love this. Try. That's all you can do.
Well, I think, you know, I was thinking of Cambridge actually at this time of the year. We used to drive up towards that end to Cambridge and that area. There were so many great houses there that would have flower shows, and I loved that area of the country. It's so beautiful. It really is so beautiful. So where do you know, when you put this world together, you thought of this island. Tell us about how this idea came for the island.
So I knew I wanted the mainland where Skandar's story starts. I wanted it to look very, very much like what we experience now in the UK. I wanted it to be, they have maths, they have science, you know, it's normal. But this one fundamental difference with these unicorns, and I knew they were really dangerous, so I needed to isolate them somewhere. So an island makes sense to me. And the island then developed, so it had fault lines that were elemental. So it has these four lines of fire, earth, water, and air lines. And that's where the kind of fundamental magic of the unicorns and the island comes from. And I think I've always liked islands. I like the idea of them being hidden. There are lots of stories about islands that disappear and reappear. And I thought that would be a good place for these unicorns to be hidden, because they're only discovered 15 years before the book starts. So they have been secret for a long time.
I just love the image of you being in Cambridge. tell us a little bit about how you got to Cambridge.
Yeah, so I at school, I luckily got good grades. I applied for Spanish at university. So I started off doing Spanish. And then I switched to law, because at Cambridge you can do a kind of combination of degree. So I spent kind of my first year studying Marquez and Isabel Allende and magical realism, and then I switched to law after that. I found it fascinating, law. I find people fascinating, and I think that's what made me also want to be a writer, because you take those fascinating parts of people and you put them into new characters and see what you get. And like reading law cases and things like that, and the kind of things people get up to. I really did enjoy that. But I think doing it in practice, I just realized I don't want to do this forever. So that was it, really. But I met my husband at Cambridge, so that was something great that came out of it.
And of course, the other thing that came out of it is that you are very able to read a contract.
Yes, that's true.
And that really, in your position since you are now so celebrated and people are throwing contracts at you willy-nilly, right and left. It must be fun that you get to actually be able to read the contracts and not need a lawyer.
Yeah, that's helpful. Although, you know,
you still
it is helpful sometimes to ask someone who knows more about it.
Oh, I was going to say, you still need a lawyer. Even a lawyer needs a lawyer. Because you are probably signing some very complicated contracts now with movie studios, all sorts of trademarks and things that you're getting now. So instead of people buying all of those pink fluffy unicorns that I don't like, they're going to be buying your unicorns. You must have a lot of contracts to sign.
I do. I also, it's now sold in about, I think it's 46 territories now. So there are all of those contracts that for those, the rights in different languages as well. So also Spanish is coming useful at last because it's also going to be published in Spanish. So yeah, there are many contracts going on right now.
Wow. The rollout for your book has been amazing. I don't think many people get a rollout like this. Of course, the production values are great. They've done a beautiful, beautiful book for you. So tell us, you must have an agent who is really a happy person.
I do. He's wonderful. And my film agent is great as well. They're a great combination. My agent for my books, he's a very honest person, and I think that was what I really looked for in an agent, because I took the manuscript to him originally, and he just spent 3 hours telling me stuff that he thought wasn't good enough. And I thought, this is the person I need. I need someone to tell me the truth. I need someone to be honest with me so I can make this story the best it can possibly be. But he is very happy now.
Oh, he's happy. Oh, I just... You know, they always say an agent is worth his or her weight in gold. And I think this agent's done a good job for you.
He really has. He really has. He didn't delete my email originally when I just sent him the subject line, Bloodthirsty Unicorn. So I think he's glad he didn't delete it now. But he's wonderful, and he always fights my corner, which is what you need.
Well, he's... It's just I love when an agent is a really happy person, and your agent certainly is, and your family must be pretty thrilled with this too.
Yeah, they're so happy. I think for a while they were sort of questioning, why are you writing this book about unicorns? That seems quite strange. And I remember my grandma saying to me, why aren't you a lawyer still? But they understand now. They've got it now. My mom's really proud. And I think when I was first writing the books when I was kind of 14, I always had in my head, you know, if I can publish a book, maybe I can help us kind of financially. And it's really nice to be able to now do that. And you know, she was the first person I told when I got the deal. So.
And I'm sure that at some point this is going to be a ride in some amusement park. I don't know who's going to do it, but so everybody's going to get to ride one of these unicorns at some point.
Oh, I hope so. I definitely want to ride one.
Oh, so do I. I've got first dibs. So as soon as you have the deal for the theme park, and you have to invite me because I predicted it, and you have to invite me so I can come and be there and ride a unicorn. Because as I said, I didn't like the pink ones, but I will. These ones are beautiful, and I will ride one of these ones. Okay.
Okay, that's a deal.
I think it'll be fun, and I'm sure it's going to be done. So, you know, isn't it? Wow, now you're one of these alphabet people, you know, JK, AF, with a theme park and a ride named after your character. So it's pretty exciting at your age to have all of this happen to you.
Well, it still feels like we're very much at the beginning, but it's a great way to start, I think. And if it gets children reading, then that's why I do this. That's the most important thing. So.
Well, I think it will. And of course, you've already written book two. Are you through with it?
Yes, yeah, it's in kind of the last stage of editing now, and book three is getting started pretty soon.
And with the editing process, did you enjoy that? Going well with book one, I'm sure there was a big process.
Yeah. I did actually really enjoy it. I didn't know if I would, because I love drafting, because I like the kind of imagination stage. But actually, it was great because my editors asked me all these questions about how the world worked. And so they'd be like, but how exactly does the magic work? And where does this come from? And actually, it really fires up your imagination. So in the end, I did really enjoy it. I did have to cut out quite a lot of words, but I managed to in the end. That was the most painful bit.
Well, I just want to say congratulations. You've done a great job. It's sort of an author's dream come true, what you've accomplished with this book, and so quickly, in so many languages. How many languages?
46, I think.
46 languages. Oh, well, congratulations again. And just tell people your website. What is it? A.F. Stedman?
It's afstedman.com, so easy to remember.
And Facebook, I think you have the word author after it, right? A.F. Stedman author?
Yeah, A.F. Stedman author. Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. Well, people, you can find out more about Skandar and the Unicorn Thief by A.F. Stedman. And Annabelle, I think you're wonderful, and I look forward to having you back soon. And as soon as you have a deal for an amusement park, I get the first ride on one of your unicorns. Okay?
It's a deal. It's a deal. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Okay. Bye bye now. And bye. Just remember when Tottenham's playing, think of me. Okay? All right, bye-bye. Wow, what a day. Two great books. Hostile Intent by Don Bentley. Very timely. A lot of it is set in the Ukraine. And in his book, he's trying to, there's a war. And, it's funny that sometimes this happens to an author. You write a book years ahead of time, 2 years ago, and it comes out, and there's actually a war in the Ukraine. So you'll love this book, Hostile Intent by Don Bentley. And A.F. Stedman, it's called Skandar and the Unicorn Thief. And this is a story of unicorns that, well, unlike any you have ever seen. And, of course, as I said, it will be someday an amusement park ride, and maybe we'll have a big party, because I'm going to get her to invite us. Probably it's going to be right here in Florida, so we'll be able to get a ride on one of her crazy wild unicorns. Wow, what an exciting day to talk to all of these great authors today. This is what I've always, I get so excited about it. I want to also just remind everybody I'm working as fast as I can to get the website done, but many of you have complimented me already on the fact that it is mobile friendly, so you can look at the website on your iPhone or your tablet, and it's radio-joyonpaper.com. I have really hundreds of interviews that I have to get up now that I have this whole new system that comes from WordPress. It's just a time-consuming thing, but I'm hoping to get in the next month to get most of the interviews up and all organized, because it is a big job. After all, I've been doing this for 7 years, over 7 years. We celebrated the 7th anniversary, and of course, my co-hosts for the 7th anniversary were Tasha Alexander and Andrew Grant. And I know that both of them have been working very hard. They had deadlines to finish their books. And I'm looking forward to having them as soon as their next books come out, and to have them as guests here on Joy on Paper, and to hear about this. it's always so exciting when you're working for a deadline, because it means you have a contract. It means you're making money. So I'm looking forward to having them on the program and actually talking to both of them about this whole process of writing, and about what we talked about when they were on as guests. And we talked about the Patsy Award winners. I want to tell everyone, every author who's on the program this year will be eligible for a Patsy Award next year for the next anniversary. And so if you have a particular author that you want me to invite, just let me know. Or if you have a particular author that I've interviewed that you really like them and you know, get their book and enjoy their book, send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com. It should be joymail. So it's patsy.radio@gmail.com. And tell me what books you like, what authors you enjoyed. And I know that you will definitely enjoy the two authors I spoke to today, both A.F. Stedman and Don Bentley. Just send me an email, and I will add them to my list of potential winners of the Patsy Award, because it's always exciting to see the development of authors and how they change over the years, how their books develop, how they develop as writers. And I want to make sure that we honor them and give them, you know, the recognition they deserve. So I do love getting all of your emails, and especially, again, I'm still getting congratulations for the 7th anniversary. So I want to thank you for that. And Bill Larson also wanted to extend my best wishes to all of you and tell you again that he wants you to know that if you have any questions about intellectual property, he will give you a free consultation. So all you have to do is call Larson and Larson and set up a meeting with him and talk to him about your needs. And particularly if you are planning to trademark, a character, like in this case, I was just talking to A.F. Stedman, and she has unicorns, and I'm sure they're going to be selling these unicorns. So she needs to have a trademark. And if you have a character like that you're going to be selling something, you definitely need a trademark. So contact Bill Larson at Larson & Larson. Okay, everybody. Remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her wonderful, wonderful Witch City Mysteries. Book 12 just came out last week, and it is a wonderful book. It's called Till Death, and you can get it. And also, oh, by the way, Rita Moreau is having a big sale on her Murder in the Badlands, and you can get that on Amazon, and it's the sale goes from up to May 6th, and you can get her book, Murder in the Badlands, for 99 cents. So get that, and meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for everything. We got a call from London. That's always fun. Anyway, bye-bye now, everybody, and he's going to salute me because I'm going to salute him. And everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage. I'm Steve.